Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast kind of blowing up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Thursday, March 2nd, and we are knee-deep in the NFL Scouting Combine. I'm not there. I'm not bitter about it either. Don't worry. It's not like one of the league events that I've never been to that I'm super sad that I'm not, that I've never been to and that I'm not at this year. Maybe someday. But we got a lot of news to react to out of the Combine. The drills haven't started yet. We got a big, big show ahead of us here today. Joining us to do it all is Mr. Do-It-All himself, Frank Schwab. What's going on, buddy?
A couple things real quick. You're not missing anything at the Combine. I hate to say that out loud.
Really?
People on Twitter are like, oh, this is the best week of the year. It is not. The Combine is just, it's cold usually. You don't really see any of the fun stuff that's happening. It's just a bunch of GMs and coaches and college players talking. Whatever, it's important, but it's not fun. I've been many, many times, never look forward to it. Second, yes, I feel like I had to transition back to football almost. I'm the rare football writer who's like, football's done. I want to watch some basketball. I want to get into March Madness betting posts and all that. So when you hit me up to do football, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. Football's still going on, but no, I've been keeping track. Looking forward to talk about some football. If I throw out some reference to Kansas State or something in the middle, it's just because my wires get crossed.
I mean, you see, this is the problem here, man. Like, you, Andy, Dalton, Scott, you have like other interests in the sporting
world.
But
all in the sports. So yeah, it's all in the sport. Yeah, I don't have any interests outside of sports. Like, yeah, I'm not very cultured. Let's put it that way. But I can tell you, I can tell you who's going to win the Atlantic Sun Conference Tournament, maybe. You know, my priorities, whatever.
Well, hey, we appreciate you stepping in here to run through some news out of the Combine. And most importantly, what we're going to do today after we run through some news is we're going to try to rank the coaching hires from a head coach or offensive coordinator perspective, you know, kind of put them in tiers and groups and my own rankings. And Frank can tell me where I'm dead wrong about these guys in terms of like the ones I'm most excited about for next year, the ones I think will be most impactful on their team's offenses. That's coming up later. But before we do all that, I want to run through some news items coming out of the Scouting Combine. Like you said, Frank, it's a lot of GMs. It's a lot of head coaches doing their pressers. I tried to focus on some of the more important ones that we've got coming out of the Scouting Combine. We'll start with one that we just found out this morning. The Jaguars are expected to place the franchise tag on Evan Engram. $11.3 million seems perfectly palatable to me at the tight end position. Evan Engram was a huge part of the Jaguars offense last year. It seemed like this was always where this was heading.
Yeah, I mean, it just fits, right? Like, he found the team that finally used him correctly. He was really good last year. He was a punchline for so long. Not that anymore. And is he getting overpaid a little bit? Probably. But as somebody who I'm talking to, the Christian Kirk's agent, basically, we know that sometimes you got to overpay for good players.
I would love 10% of that contract. I would I would be Christian Kirk's. Right, yeah, right.
But as somebody who has banged the drum loudly on Christian Kirk's contract being what it is, it's the same thing for Evan Ingram. Evan Ingram's really an $11 million player? Maybe. I don't know. But he fits that offense great. Trevor loves him. He's gonna have a pretty big year, and he's look, if we're talking just fantasy, probably pretty draftable in those middle rounds. You look and you say, why not? Like he the numbers are the numbers, and he was really good last year. I won't shy away from him if you know. I mean, I might not proactively draft him, but if he falls to me at a certain point, yeah, why not? I mean, there's a continuity there.
Yeah, I think Evan Ingram will be a really enticing pick next year. Obviously, we have to sort out the target distribution between him and what is Calvin Ridley going to bring to the team and the aforementioned Christian Kirk, Zay Jones. I expect them to still potentially draft a wide receiver at some point as well. Maybe not early in the draft, like an instant impact type of guy, but I think they'll add more to that wide receiver room. So we have to sort out all that target distribution. But he perfectly, Frank, Evan Ingram fits into the group of guys that I was talking about with Dalton on the last podcast, my new slogan for defending the tight ends from the cancel culture mob that's coming for them in fantasy. We got to restore the middle class, Frank. We got to restore the middle class of tight ends. We got Travis Kelce. We got all the, you know, random sleepers that people are going to hype up in the offseason that you shouldn't really care about. We just got to get that middle class of guys, the Evan Ingrams, the guys that are going to go in round 7 and 8, sixth round maybe. We got to get those guys back to like consistent prominence. And I think we can do it this year. I think Evan Ingram will be a big part of it.
I do too. I mean, it fell off a cliff this year. Like if you didn't have Kelce, you're like, oh, it's bad. There weren't many middle round guys that hit, but I think that was a little bit of variance. And I think you're right. And I think we'll see some more guys pop up, hopefully anyway, because tight end was such a wasteland last season.
Restore the middle class, baby. That's all we're trying to do here at the tight end position. All right, another one here. Speaking Wednesday, 49ers GM John Lynch told reporters that the team will have to consider signing a veteran quarterback. A couple other quarterback notes from the 49ers. Lance is a full go for OTAs, and John Lynch also says there's, quote, a variety of timelines for Brock Purdy, which is certainly what you want to hear. Frank, I've said that I want this quarterback position to be, you know, two guys enter, one guy leaves in terms of the quarterback competition here. What do you expect to happen out of the 49ers quarterback room if they do, in fact, have to go the veteran route?
I mean, there's so many layers to this. First of all, yeah, of course they got to add a veteran, right? Like the thing about Purdy is he got hurt at the wrong time. You look at his timeline and it's like, oh yeah, he should be available like late July. Like that's what the original reports were. Okay, he'll be about camp, right? What if that gets pushed back a month? What if it gets pushed back 6 weeks where we're like, his elbow's not certainly right? What do the 49ers do at that point? Because no quarterback you add in August is any good. Like, it's just, you're not picking up a guy in August and he starts. Like, that's bad business. So I think they have to be proactive. But on the same thing, you're not signing Derek Carr, right? Like, you're going to be going and getting somebody who you're like, I guess if he has to play a few weeks. The whole point of this, though, is a guy you mentioned. Trey Lance, he's just, I mean, Charles Robinson, our colleague, has talked about this often, where he has just completely fallen out of favor with the 49ers. Now, things can change. He's going to be the guy all offseason. If he shows up and he looks good and he's putting in the work, maybe he can get back into favor, because this is, not much happens in OTAs, right? Guys are running around in shorts and we make too much of everything. This is something that actually matters. How is Trey Lance handling being the one healthy quarterback, along with some slappy veteran probably? How is he handling the leadership role of being the one quarterback in OTAs? I think that's going to go a long way in, can he get out of Shanahan's doghouse and create a competition? Right now, I do not think there's a competition at all. As much as I like Trey Lance, I think Trey Lance is good. I'll die on this hill. I'm stubborn. But Kyle Shanahan doesn't think he's good right now. It could change. But as of right now, I think Purdy is the guy if he's healthy. But Trey Lance can change that if he has a great offseason. And he, my goodness, does he need a good offseason right now.
Yeah, I think it's all in Trey Lance's hands at this point, because you're right. The veteran that they'd sign is probably like in the Marcus Mariota tier, you know, of guys.
I don't even think that. I think Mariota's kind of like a Cadillac backup, right? Like he's pretty high priority backup. I'm thinking even further down the line. You just can't – how many resources can you really commit to what amounts to your third quarterback? It's hard. It's just a hard situation for them to be in, right? Like, all of a sudden – I mean, if Marcus gets – I don't know how much he would get, but yeah, if he gets a pretty good contract for a backup quarterback, you're like, well, this guy's probably going to be your number three in a best-case scenario. So I don't know. It's a really tough spot for them to be in just because of the quote-unquote variety of timelines for Brock Purdy.
Yeah, there's so many there's a wide variety of the whole like bridge quarterbacks that are available this year, the potential stopgap. So they can explore that. And that's probably the absolute best they do is like somebody in that tier. And it's probably a little bit lower. You're right. It's all in Trey Lance's hands. And I am excited to follow this story. I know people kind of like roll their eyes at Trey Lance and like, you know, I know Dalton is sick of everybody hating on Trey Lance. But I think it's a really fascinating story. And yeah, I mean, there's definitely a scenario where he's the guy all offseason. It goes moderately well. He doesn't play well through the first 3 weeks and they just throw Purdy out there because he's hopefully healthy. But yeah, like you said, the timeline for Purdy, it's been training camp or maybe now it'll be week one. And that's just really not what you want to see. It's unfortunate that it's happened that way. Sticking in the NFC West, Cardinals head coach Jonathan Gannon replied, I'm not sure, when asked if wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins is going to play for this team in 2023. The full quote went, I'm not sure. We're evaluating everyone. I know this. He's a premier receiver. You have to plan for. He limits what you do when you play defense. He's a valuable asset for us. So, Frank, I'll ask you, do you expect DeAndre Hopkins to be on this team in 2023? And if he's not, where do you want to see him land?
I think he will be, just because my sense is the Cardinals are going to be asking for too much. This seems to be more of a fishing expedition of how much can we get for DeAndre Hopkins? And if some team is like, sure, we will give you the moon, like he's 26 years old and not 31, I believe DeAndre's 31, right? I mean, I think that they would do that, of course. Why not? But I don't know that that offer's out there for them. If he does move, look, there's a million teams that could use a receiver, right? Like, I mean, who can't use a receiver in the modern NFL? I don't have the Bears make total sense. They have extra draft capital and are going to get extra draft capital if they trade down a couple times, which I think they will do from the number one pick. So the Bears are the obvious landing spot. And I would like to see that because I really want to see the Justin Fields thing through. There, as you've talked about many times, there's not much in the free agent market. There's just, you're not fixing your receiver room in free agency this year. You're going to have to get creative. One way to do that would be swing a deal for DeAndre Hopkins, because I don't want to see Justin Fields out there, you know, I mean, having a pretty bad passing year like he did last year and everybody piling on when it's like, no, he has nobody. He has Equanimeous St. Brown to throw to. What are we doing here? I want to see them do something. The Bears fit best, but I don't know. I think the Cardinals are going to shoot for the moon here, as they should. Why not? But I wouldn't. I don't think I would pay a premium price for DeAndre Hopkins in a trade right now.
Yeah, the Bears do make so much sense just because they have an absurd amount of cap space. And like, they could be one of those teams.
They can do whatever they want. Yeah.
They could literally do whatever they want. And it's unfortunate they don't have their second round pick, which went to another receiver, Chase Claypool. It's just,
what are they doing? What are you doing? Why?
I mean,
bad move, bad. Anyway,
it made no sense at the time.
No.
It makes even less sense now that they made that second round pick trade for Chase Claypool. But yeah, again, I don't know what you end up then giving up for DeAndre Hopkins, but they're one of the few teams that could trade for him and not like ask him to take a pay cut just because they can afford it. And it just, Justin Fields, like, they're not going to find him, you know, an AJ Brown like Jalen Hurts got last year, you know, that like, hey, we got questions about this guy. Let's get let's get a potential all pro talent who is on the upswing. DeAndre Hopkins is an all pro talent, but he's definitely on the downswing. Now, I think he played really well last year, going back and like charting him for perception. I think he's a declining player, but he's not about to fall off a cliff. And I actually think like a big game hunter like Justin Fields, who definitely wants to throw deep, definitely wants to push the ball downfield, is a much better fit for DeAndre Hopkins than playing in the horizontal raid with Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, I can't, like, the Hopkins has never been a tackle breaker. What are you trying to get him on these like cutesy little you run after catch plays, Cliff? I mean, come on, give me a break.
It's bad. And also, real quick, this is all spitballing. So if Hopkins does go to Chicago, or anybody does, if any alpha goes to Chicago somehow, he's gonna walk off the bus with 200 targets. Like, who else are you throwing to? If you're Justin Fields, you're like, where's DeAndre? I'm throwing that guy the ball. I mean, you're not messing around with anybody else. So it's a true number one lands there, and even Chase Claypool, if nobody else does, if a true number one lands there, whoever the Bears number one is, should get a lot of targets if they upgrade that spot at all.
Yeah, like a Hopkins, Chase Claypool, Darnell Mooney, like trio. That's actually like, that's yeah, a real
it's
receiver.
It's an NFL club. Receiver room. It's an NFL receiver room, which they did not have last year.
Absolutely. So I do kind of hope Hopkins gets traded just because I don't think he wants to spend half the year catching passes from like Trace McSorley or Colt McCoy because, you know, Kyler's going to miss so much time. Yeah, yeah. I think it kind of makes sense for them from a timeline perspective to make the trade. And because of the lack of free agent resources, the lack of like ascending young guys on the trade market, I think it kind of ends up happening. One team that's gotten floated around is the Patriots as a potential landing spot because DeAndre Hopkins and Bill Belichick really think highly of each other. Again, watching that tape recently, it's like they really, you can see that Bill Belichick thinks highly of DeAndre Hopkins based on how he played the Arizona Cardinals and DeAndre Hopkins defensively. But they also have Bill O'Brien as their offensive coordinator, as we're going to talk about later. And the way that relationship
I didn't even put two and two together. Like, wow. Can you imagine?
I had not thought about that actually until putting this outline together and thinking like, oh, Hopkins, Patriots, but also, right, Bill O'Brien's the play caller now. Maybe they can mend fences, but that relationship didn't necessarily end on the rosiest of notes. So maybe that's not a destination that works out for him.
That would be really, really fun, actually.
All right, next one up here. Buccaneers release Leonard Fournette. Look, Fournette obviously did not play well last year. This was not a surprise at all. We know the Bucs are in the red deeper than anybody else from a cap perspective. So I will ask you though, Frank, Rashad White, he's a guy that people are talking about on fantasy Twitter for sure right now. How excited are you about Rashad White, or are you kind of nervous heading into this offseason where so many running backs are going to be available that he might get jumped by somebody?
Yeah, I mean, we got to see how it all shakes out. But just from the talent aspect alone, you really got to like him. I mean, he's good. Like, I thought he was better than Leonard last year, obviously. I don't think that's anybody would disagree there. I think talent-wise, yes, I'd proactively draft him. But the big problem is how does this Tampa Bay offense look? I mean, we're going to get to that, in a little bit. Kyle Trask is our quarterback. Is this going to be a high-scoring offense? Is this an offense you want to buy into with, like, a – I'm going to proactively draft Rashad White in the early rounds? I don't know. It would give me pause. Let's put it that way. But talent-wise, he's really, really good. I wonder where Leonard's going to land, honestly. Like, I think he could have a kind of dead cat bounce type of season left in him. I'm not just completely writing him off like he's just done. We're not going to see him anymore. I think he could have one more year where he actually provides some value to whoever wants to sign him. And, you know, I mean, he's probably going to come cheap at this point. So I think somebody will sign him. He'll get a good shot. We'll see what he does with it. I as crazy as it sounds, depending on the landing spot, probably be more interested in drafting Leonard Fournette in fantasy because the price is going to be just bottom out, right? Like, I mean, he's going to go not free, but pretty cheap. Whereas Rashad White, you're going to have to proactively draft a running back in what's likely to be a really, really bad offense.
I know. Yeah, we'll talk about that offense more in depth later. But, I keep saying this with running backs this offseason. Like, there's going to be a cataclysmic shift here over the next few weeks because we have so many guys that are about to hit free agency. I think of all the guys I'm confident is back with their team, I think Josh Jacobs ends up back with the Raiders, whether on the franchise tag or, you know, some sort of deal there. Like, I think that'd be a tough sell to fans after you let Derek Carr go for nothing to then let Josh Jacobs go for nothing after he was one of the best backs in the league last year. But like Saquon Barkley, Miles Sanders, like these guys are available. There's good players in the draft. There's questions about Tony Pollard.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so many of these guys could hit the market and shake up backfields and then there's the draft, like I said. So that could be a place where they spend another day two pick on a running back or a day three pick on a running back that ends up shaking things up with Rashad White. That's going to be the case for all of these guys. Another guy who might hit the market at this running back position is Joe Mixon, who Bengals director of player personnel, Duke Tobin, said, I don't know, when asked about whether Joe Mixon would be on the 2023 Bengals. Again, I don't know. You know, it's not the best quote or whatever, especially when on the other side for a T. Higgins trade, he said the following things. It's not on my mind. It's a little ridiculous right now. I'm not in the business of making other teams better. And, quote, you want a great receiver, go find your own.
I love that.
That is so great. Because I never understood, like, why they'd just trade T. Higgins, all that type of stuff. But, yeah, Joe Mixon, he might be another one of these running backs that hits the free agent market in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Real quick on T. Higgins. Like, I hate this kind of speculation where people just throw it out there. Like, oh, yeah, they're going to have to trade T. Higgins. Why would they trade T. Higgins? It's right. Stupid. T. Higgins is a top 15, 10 receiver in this league. He's good really, player. Really good. What makes the Bengals good is they have two of the top 10, 15 mm-hmm. receivers in the NFL. So, it doesn't surprise me at all that they're not going to entertain that notion. We're mixing, though. At some point, the expiration date hits on all these running backs. It sucks, but you don't play forever at that position. I don't think Mixon was nearly as good this past year, other than that one game where he scored like 18 million touchdowns. He really wasn't that great this past year, but it's still hard to replace him. So we'll see. Maybe they're a team that uses some draft capital on a running back just to keep this offense humming and have all these different weapons. But yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all if Mixon's out there, and then we'll see what kind of market he has. He'll be a very interesting player for agency, because I can see a team saying he really fits what we do, as a multi-talented dude. He's not that old, really.
No, yeah.
We could squeeze a couple more good years out of him.
The Dolphins are an interesting team to me to potentially add a running back. You know, they have Jeff Wilson and Raheem Mostert hitting the open market. And I could see, like, hey, if we want to take this offense, have it evolve in a way, like, we know what the passing game is. As long as Tua is healthy, these two receivers, that's great. But, like, you know, if they want to get like a B talent at running back instead of like a couple of C plus guys in Jeff Wilson and Raheem Mostert, I could potentially see them as a landing spot for a guy like Joe Mixon. Yeah, T. Higgins, I love all you're so right about that. It becomes this thing that, like, somebody speculates in an article, and then you get like tweets about it, and then we've got to talk about it. But there's no real, I think ever since the A.J. Brown thing went down, and it was like, why the hell would they trade A.J. Brown? That makes no sense. What a ridiculous notion. And then they did it. It's like,
it fueled all this, right?
It fueled all of this. But at the same time, remember, there was the Deebo Samuel trade speculation, DK Metcalf trade speculation. It was like, okay, no, these guys aren't going anywhere. They're going to be with their current team. So I think for the most part, teams want to retain and pay their young, drafted, and developed guys. That's exactly what we're going to get with the Bengals and T. Higgins. Last thing here, Frank. Mentioned Saquon Barkley earlier. The Giants are going to be one of the teams of the offseason, because they have these pivotal decisions to make. You know, the contracts they need to hand out, the guys hitting free agency. Well, we got one big news. One of the big dominoes finally fell, Frank. Kenny Galladay was released by the team.
$72 million. Well spent. Well spent, Dave Gettleman. Well done. I just remember Kenny Galladay costing me a bet, but catching us like one touchdown with the Giants against the Eagles in that season finale. So thanks for that, Kenny.
What did you bet? What was
it? It was like, I just remember it was some teaser or something that I needed. I just needed the Eagles to hold on. And this guy, like, literally, I'm not kidding. Like, you know, I watch every game. I cover the league. Some Giants receiver catches a touchdown and I'm mad. And then I'm like, who is that? Who just caught that touchdown? I'm like, oh my God, that's Kenny Galladay's music. I didn't recognize him. I was like, oh wow, I haven't even thought about Kenny Galladay in weeks. So,
I mean, understandable that you forgot. I can't remember a time where like a new coaching staff came in and like a high priced veteran, a guy like Kenny Galladay. And the crazy thing with Galladay is that, like, he was good in Detroit. He wasn't.
Yeah.
Like,
he wasn't this bad. I mean, even if he was like a little disappointing, I'd be like, all right. He absolutely vanished off the face of the earth after he signed that contract. I didn't see that coming. I can't lie.
Yeah, he was one of the worst RP profiles I've ever charted in 2021, his first year with the Giants.
Is he the worst free agent signing ever? Like, you're up there with like Albert Haynesworth. And he's for dollar per production. Like, yeah, he's absolutely in that conversation.
It's up there too. And because like when Joe Shane and Brian Daboll got there, like, sometimes, you know, it's like, all right, here's some big mistake that the former, you know, former GM and former head coach made. Let's try to make it work. They were pretty much like, nope, from the jump, they were talking about that guy, like Colin Johnson or whatever, I think is the big receiver. Like, oh yeah, we need a big receiver outside who's going to make plays like this guy. He tore his Achilles in camp. It's like, yeah, you have another guy, big receiver, who can make plays on the outside. Never once
like
even thought.
$48 bazillion dollars. And it's like, nah, we're not going to even try that.
He's like, as much as you said the Christian Kirk thing at the top and how I was like, okay, you know, look, he got that contract because he's the best available player in free agency. That's just how it works. Kenny Galladay was the best wide receiver available in free agency that year. He got that contract, and man, did it go the complete other direction of Christian Kirk. So that is a cautionary tale that happens sometimes. You know, what can you do? All right, that was some relatively spicy news coming out of these. Is it the hottest on the Schofield scale or whatever in terms of news? No, not really, but relatively spicy news coming out of the NFL scouting combine, coming out of these pointless GM head coach pressers that Frank apparently hated going to, and I'm for some reason jealous that that I've never gotten to do. I mean, maybe I just need to get a life, but we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to get into our meat of the show today, a very exciting breakdown of the coaching hires in the NFL. All right, we're back. Frank, we got 16 teams to talk about here that either hired a new head coach that's going to call plays, or a new offensive coordinator, or their offensive coordinator left and somebody else, not naming any names, is going to take over the play calling duty. I decided to tier these into four groups. I ranked them within those tiers. Again, I want you to tell me if I'm way too high or way too low on something here. Let's get it started with the first tier here. These are the love it. I think this is a big advantage, and it's a big shift in projections for these teams in the coming season. My number one team here, my number one hire, is Frank Reich, the former Colts coach, as the offensive coordinator. He also brings along a star-studded staff with him, including Thomas Brown, the former Rams assistant head coach and tight ends coach. He's going to be the offensive coordinator. Josh McCown is the quarterback coach. Jim Caldwell is like a senior assistant here. Frank, I love the Frank Reich hire for the Carolina Panthers. We don't know who's going to be their quarterback yet, but I think it's a big deal for this team that could not have been more of a joke the last few years with Matt Rhule.
Very true. Let me lay out the parameters here, because I'm going to put I like your tiers. We're going to get through them. It's not going to make for great podcasting, because I'm not going to be up in arms. I'm not going to fake debate you, because I agreed with most of what you did. This one, I was like, number one, really, Carolina. We're just talking about the fantasy impact, right? Because I like Frank Reich as a coach. I think that the culture there is going to change. Another hill I'm going to die on is that Frank Reich is a good coach. And I like the hire a lot, but we're just talking about fantasy right here, right? I mean, if that's it, I wonder.
You know, we're talking about like how the offense is going to grow and change, yeah. Which obviously bleeds into fantasy. We're just strictly talking about what it means for the offense.
Okay. And why do you think that this is going to transform the offense? How do you think this offense is going to look with Frank Reich? Because, I mean, there were obvious excuses for the Colts and why they never took off on offense, but they weren't some dynamic offense the past few years. Like I get it. Matt Ryan was cooked, all that kind of stuff. JT was hurt. But Frank Reich doesn't strike me as this offensive genius is coming in and the Carolina Panthers are going to be a top 12 offense all of a sudden.
Well, I don't know. I kind of disagree in that I think they were a really well-constructed, really well-designed offense, and I think they were very different versions of themselves throughout the Frank Reich era. It's just so hard to judge Frank Reich because it was the different quarterback every year.
You're totally right.
I think his 1 year with Andrew Luck was great. Like, I think that was one of Luck's best seasons of his career. Remember the thing with Andrew Luck was always like, obviously, this is what ended up kind of ruining his career, in addition to Ryan Grigson and that version of the Colts never protecting him, right, was that he would always throw, like, he would hold on to the ball forever. He would constantly, our buddy Sigmund Bloom would say, he always looked like he got dropped in behind enemy lines. It was like, all right, now shoot your way out. That was like how he played. But under Frank Reich, he got the ball out quick. He was more willing to take those checkdowns. Like, he was an evolved version of himself. I always think back to that with Frank Reich. I think the offense around Phillip Rivers was good. I think that the RPO heavy offense around Carson Wentz, Carson Wentz is what he is, I think Reich had a lot of really good ideas. And I think that if the Panthers go ahead here and like pair him and this great young staff of teachers with a young quarterback here, I know they're like talking about Derek Carr. They met with Derek Carr. I don't think that's going to end up happening. I think that's just probably doing due diligence. If they get a young quarterback here, I think that could really help the Panthers. Maybe not this year, but like guys like DJ Moore, the offensive line is pretty good. Like, I think they've got enough here that they could be a really good offense with fantasy value. Again, maybe not right away, but in the next few years. I'm just very excited about this whole coaching staff.
I'll be interested to see where the Panthers offense goes. And part of that is the quarterback position. What are they going to do?
Yeah.
Because they're stuck in a spot where they have a good draft pick, not a great draft pick. And teams, you're probably going to have to pay up. You're probably going to have to be like, if we want Will Levis, we're going to have to move up because he ain't going to be here. I think it's number 9 is where they are. They're in that kind of no man's land range where if you don't move up, you're probably not getting the quarterback you want. And it'll be very interesting to see where this goes. I've always said, and I assume this anyway, nobody's come out and said this, but I don't think Frank Reich would have signed up for this if it was, yeah, we're just going to do the veteran carousel every year. We're the 1 year washed up guy. We're going to, he wants a young guy to mold. And I think he can. I mean, he's a smart guy. And like you said, he's kind of a, he adjusts very well to his personnel. All right, what do I have? What do I got? I got Andrew Luck. We're going to run that offense. So I got Carson Wentz. Let's RPO the heck out of this thing and make Jonathan Taylor the NFL's rushing champ. He's very good at that. So I'll grant you that. I don't know if this is the impact hire, at least on the 2023 Panthers, that you think it is. I think your offense gets better, of course. It can't get any worse.
Yeah.
But I'm not exactly excited. Oh, like, oh, my goodness, he's going to unlock all these Panthers' values in fantasy, and their offense is going to be top 10-ish. I just can't see that unless there's some answer, a quarterback where I'm like, oh, wow, okay, I didn't see that coming. It wouldn't be number one on my list. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough. I just think he moves the needle for sure, but I'm just maybe a little too high on the whole idea here. But I think that, again, if they get like a, you know, stopgap veteran, Jacoby Brissett's an easy name to bring up because he has history with Frank Reich. Like, he's one of these guys that has started an entire season with Frank Reich.
I mean, why are you doing, like, Jacoby, I think the legend of Jacoby Brissett has kind of taken off a little too much.
In fairness to Jacoby Brissett, it's probably because he was like 12th in EPA per dropback and Deshaun Watson was 41st on the same offense. I think you're right that that's probably grown the legend of Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah. But some advanced metrics are really good on him. For sure.
Yeah. I think you just, like, as a guy to start half the season and then hand it over to a Will Levis, Anthony Richardson type in the second half of the year. And then I think, like, for DJ Moore, you're really cooking there. Like, as a, you got an efficient guy to get you the ball early. You've got a young guy to grow with later in the season. And we get him off of the Allen Robinson, Terry McLaurin path of sadness at the quarterback position there.
So we're already, it's March 2nd. We're already talking ourselves into DJ Moore again. We're really going to do this to ourselves. Another
100%. Ryan and all the other haters out there who called DJ Moore my guy all year. We're going to be talking about him all next year as well. So just get ready for that.
Only got six more months of DJ Moore talking ourselves into, well, Jacoby Brissett's throwing him the ball. Of course he's going to go for 1,400 yards.
And then five more months of coping after that. So should be a great time. All right. Number two on my list, again, in tier one here, is Todd Monken, the former Georgia offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach. He also has history in the NFL. You know, that Ryan Fitzpatrick year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He has history with the Browns. He has a wide variety of offensive backgrounds. I think that he is the perfect coach to strike a balance, Frank, between keeping the Ravens in their core identity as a run-first physical offense built around Lamar Jackson, while also evolving the unit a little bit out of kind of the stale passing game concepts that were the theme of the Greg Roman era. Of course, the big thing here is, like, the specter of Lamar Jackson and whether he's actually going to play there. You know, you've got Ravens receiver Rashad Bateman in a tweet storm this morning about something Eric DaCosta said. The vibes maybe aren't that great in Baltimore right now, which, you know, is certainly something to bring up here. But in a hypothetical world where Lamar is there, Bateman's healthy, they add a couple pieces to the receiver room, I think Todd Monken's like a perfect coach to make this offense sing the way I think it should.
Yeah, and I'm just going to talk about this, assuming Lamar's there. DaCosta said yesterday, we want him back. I always tell this to people who are like, oh, they're going to trade Lamar. They're going to, or your team, whatever team you like. We got to upgrade. Or we got to get rid of our quarterback. All right, that's cool. Tell me who your week one starter is.
Yeah.
Because that's the second part of this. You really think the Ravens are just going to give up on Lamar Jackson and start Tyler Huntley week one? Really? Like, I don't think
Tyler Huntley's a free agent. They'll be the Jacoby Brissett team,
Pro Bowler Tyler Huntley. So I'm going to assume Lamar is there. And obviously we all know the offense completely changes and all this gets thrown out if Lamar leaves. So the one thing that really excites me about Monken and his background is how he uses tight ends. He was the 2000, I think it was 18 Bucks, really used the tight ends well. They had a couple guys. I think it was Brayton Howard, who really had big seasons.
Yeah.
So obviously you project this onto Mark Andrews, who had a disappointing season last year, but we all know he's great. He could end up having the bounce back to 2021 with Monken calling the plays. I mean, Brock Bowers became a superstar at Georgia with Monken running the offense there. I really like that part. I think they're going to hunt some more explosive plays. I mean, we've heard that a lot. I mean, just reading up on what Monken's saying, what John Harbaugh's saying, they want to get the ball downfield a little bit more, make some plays. I like that. That kind of fits their skill set at receiver a little bit better. So I do like that. The one thing, and, you know, I know the Georgia quarterback, Stetson Bennett, he ran a lot, I mean, for what his skill set is, but can Monken devise a running offense around Lamar Jackson's skills? This offense is different than the other 31. And Greg Roman knew that. And I, for all Greg Roman's faults, I do think he embraced the, hey, we have a unicorn here. We're not going to run the same offense anybody else in the NFL does. We are going to build a Lamar Jackson offense because that kid's special. Can Monken do that? It's not really in his background to do that. I think that that's the key to this whole thing. Can he find, you can't just turn Lamar Jackson into, like, you know, when Jim Mora wanted to run a West Coast offense with Michael Vick, like, what are you doing? Come on. Like, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard.
God.
You have to understand Lamar's different than every other quarterback. And I have to make an offense that's completely different than the other 31. I think Monken's a smart guy. He's had a great run at Georgia. I think he could do that, but that's the question I have.
Agree. The fact that Stetson Bennett had like double digit rushing touchdowns that let me tell you what, he ain't Lamar Jackson.
No.
I mean, he can run from the cops, but he's not necessarily a run at first NFL quarterback. That's it, Bennett. So I think there's that at least gives you some optimism when thinking about Monken with Lamar Jackson. But agree, there are open questions here. Obviously, the biggest one being, is Lamar going to be there? But I think you and I are on the same page that this is.
But the one thing I will say, the one thing I will proactively draft Mark Andrews if Lamar's back, because I think Monken's going to be like, that's the dude. I know how to get tight ends in space and make them hum. And Mark Andrews is going to have a bounce back year. I mean, I don't think that's a secret to anybody. I think he would immediately be Kelsey light again, even after he kind of hurt some of us who missed on a Kelsey, took Mark Andrews in drafts. I think Andrews bounces. He's got the talent for it. And now he's got the offensive coordinator who's going to feature him.
Restoring the middle class at tight ends, Frank. That's what we're doing here. Although he might be more like upper middle class at the worst.
He's like the Lexus, right? You don't exactly own a Beamer, but you got a Lexus. Right. You feel pretty good. You're not driving a Honda Civic like I am around Colorado.
Frank, you're doing just fine for yourself, man. Don't let the haters down. Speaking of Colorado, number three here, Denver Broncos. It's Sean Payton for me. He's hired as a head coach. We know that. He also... friends and family plan, baby. It is undefeated. Joe Lombardi is the offensive coordinator here with the Denver Broncos. Longtime connection there with the Saints and Joe Lombardi and Sean Payton, all that. But look, as much as Sean Payton's going to come with a lot of fanfare, he's going to come with a lot of nobody's going to talk to the media more than Sean Payton. You and I were at Radio Row together, Frank, and it was like, is Sean Payton doing hits with everybody here? I mean, he's doing scrums in the middle of the floor. It's a whole thing. Going to come with a lot of that, but also I think he's going to bring a really good offensive background here to the Denver Broncos. I'm curious what you think about this pairing, him and Russell Wilson, and like, does the Russell Wilson thing, how much does it even matter with Sean Payton here in terms of projecting?
It's very interesting. I mean, the personalities are, I mean, Russ has kind of seemed humbled by last year. That helps because Sean Payton's going to come in. And if there's a Nathaniel Hackett came in and was like almost starstruck by Russell Wilson, like do what you want, whatever. Sean Payton don't play that. He's got a bigger ego than anybody in that building. And hey, rightfully so, he's a great coach. So we're going to have to see how that fits. I don't know that's intangible stuff. We're never going to get our heads around really. But what we do know is Sean Payton late. Look, it all looked the same for Drew Brees late in his career because it was the same uniform and all that kind of stuff. But Brees was a much different guy his last 4 years. And Payton, to his credit, completely changed their offense. They became a run-first offense. Three of their last 4 years with Payton there, they were top five in the league in rushing attempts. Some of that is because they had good teams and they were running a lot. I get that. But I think Payton looked at Brees late in his career and said, this isn't the same guy. I'm going to have to switch up my offense. We're going to have to be a little more balanced or even imbalanced with the running game taking over a little bit. And I think he's going to do the same for Russell Wilson. I think he's going to say, Russ ain't cooking no more. I mean, we're going to have to see, whatever. But I saw last year a guy in decline, but I can save him. I can save him and make him a quality quarterback still. Maybe not that top five quarterback we thought he, you know, at least I thought he might be with the Denver Broncos if they let him really get going. I think it kind of, to me, I'm not really excited about Russell Wilson. I guess Jerry Judy's going to be fine and Cortland will do his thing. I'm more excited about like, who's their running back? Is Javonte Williams healthy? Because he could end up being a huge part of this offense that unlike Rashad White, who we talked about a little bit ago, this could be a viable offense. Sean Payton, I have total trust in Sean Payton putting a good offense out there. So now you're buying into a running back who is going to be discounted a little bit because of the injury. If you have that faith that he's going to be healthier, whoever they go pick up, because they're going to have to add to that room, I think whoever's the running back there could be really, really valuable, because you look at what Sean Payton did with Drew Brees late in his career, and I think he's going to follow the same blueprint with Russell Wilson now.
This sounds mega boring, but, you know, Latavius Murray played some pretty good snaps for this team last year, and like, apparently Sean Payton was on Pat McAfee's show talking about, like, yeah, Latavius Murray was texting him in the middle of, like, last year talking about, like, coming to the Broncos and stuff like that. And there's history there.
He'd be the Mark Ingram, the Saints, right? Like, he could have value as the Mark
Ingram. Yeah. Why so not? He could hold the fort down for the first couple of weeks if Williams is working back into form, and then maybe by, like, week six, Williams is really cooking there. Because I agree with you, like, the offense will be good with Sean Payton. I know it's hard sometimes for people to separate quarterback, like Hall of Fame quarterback and play caller, but, you know, Brees wasn't like prime Peyton Manning when he hit, or like even late career Peyton Manning, like he hit free agency and stuff like that, and like, oh, we know he's going to be good. Even Peyton, there was obviously outstanding questions Peyton Manning, but Drew Brees came there with a lot of questions. They built this great legendary offense around him. I think they can get Russell Wilson to rebound to like the 15th best quarterback in the NFL.
You know? It's better than 27th or whatever he was last year.
Better than averaging like 16.9 points per game or whatever they were doing.
They won't be so unwatchable. Let's put it that way, because they were absolutely unwatchable last year.
Last one in tier one for me, Shane Steichen, former Eagles offensive coordinator, hired as head coach. Jim Bob Cooter, the former Jaguars passing him, hired as offensive coordinator. I don't love that Jim Bob Cooter's like kind of the guy who neutered Matthew Stafford in Detroit and made him like a big check down guy. I don't love that. But Shane Steichen, I was really impressed with his work with the Eagles. I think everybody was designing an offense around Jalen Hurts over the last 2 years, because it couldn't possibly be any more different than Shane Steichen's background as like a Norv Turner disciple from those Chargers days. Indianapolis Colts, Shane Steichen, I'm really high on this hire.
I like it too. I really do. I might have even had this number one. I mean, I'm going to say this over and over. It depends on the quarterback. Like, what's your answer quarterback? Okay, that's going to determine what you do as a play caller. But I love that. I pulled a quote from Steichen. I just love this philosophy. He said about, you know, he's talking about his offensive scheme, and he said, it's going to look differently each week. But my philosophy is we're going to throw to score points in this league and run to win. Like,
yeah,
perfect. You get it. Thank you. I mean, and I like the fact that, you know, he says it's going to look differently every week. I think the good teams, and they did this really, really well in Philadelphia. What do we do to beat this team this week? At some weeks, it's going to be Jonathan Taylor getting 30 carries. Some weeks, it's not. And I think that he gets it. He understands that you can't just be like, this is my scheme, and this is what we are going to do, and this is our identity. I hate the identity thing. He is like, our identity is what does the defense stink at? Because we're just going to pick apart that, and we're going to be able to do multiple things well. I really like this hire. Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's good. They're going to have a good offense. Hopefully, can get Michael Pittman back on track. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, Jonathan Taylor's healthy and they use him. There's multiple pieces in this offense I'm excited about if the quarterback situation gets worked out.
Yeah, there's going to be so much like jockeying between the Texans and the Colts at pick 2 and 4, and like who's going to trade up in front of who. You know, you got Jim Mercy out there like, my relationship with the Bears goes back, to the 1960s or whatever. So, you know, Jim Mercy is definitely telegraphing the whole thing terms of what he wants. And then I love how Chris Ballard, too, by the way, is like, oh, the media. It's like, how about your owner?
Your owner's just repeating what the media is repeating what your owner said. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty funny. But I love Shane Steichen. I mean, they were trying to throw to win to start the 2021 season, right? And then they're like midway through, like, we can't do this. We actually have to be something completely different. And then they were a different entity entirely this year. Really excited about that part of it. I think they do get Michael Pittman back on track. I think Jonathan Taylor gets back on track. And they'll find some young quarterback to develop here. And hopefully the offensive line is better than it was last year. And they could really be good. All right, let's move on to tier two here. These ones, I think, are a net positive for the offense. I'm not like as in love with it as the early part of tier one. But these ones I'm still excited about. Number five here, Washington Commanders, Eric Bieniemy, former Chiefs offensive coordinator, is hired as their offensive coordinator. He gets a bump to assistant head coach or whatever. We know Bieniemy's trying to, you know, boost his resume here by getting away from Andy Reid. You're going to say it depends on who the quarterback is, of course, but
I think we already know who the quarterback is, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think it'll be Sam Howell and some like veteran competition here. But regardless, I think Bieniemy coming here is a net positive for the Washington Commanders. I like some of the things Scott Turner did, but of course it's he had some problems on his resume too that I think Bieniemy can do a little bit better with.
Yeah, the Bieniemy situation is so interesting. I mean, obviously, for whatever reason, he just cannot break down the door and get that head coaching opportunity. I think that, you know, it's unfortunate that he had to make this kind of downward move in his career to kind of prove, hey, it's not just Andy and Mahomes. I can do this too. I have faith in him. I like this. I agree with you that it's not top tier, but it is. Yeah, this is a positive. I think it's impossible to be around Andy Reid as long as Eric Bieniemy was and not pick up everything. Like he is, Andy's obviously a genius play caller. And I think Eric Bieniemy is going to be really good. I do think they're going to go with Sam Howell, and I think they should. I think they need to see that thing through for a year. I really like that pick. I really like how he played. I don't know that the opportunity is going to present itself to upgrade immediately. And if Sam Howell stinks, you just move on in 2024. No big deal. I like the fit. I think he's going to get the most out of Sam Howell. I think he's going to get most out of guys like Terry McLaurin. I think he's going to be very creative. No, he doesn't have Mahomes anymore, and that makes it tougher to call plays. But I think that I really do. I like the hire. I think that Bieniemy is going to prove that he wasn't just like, you know, riding in the back seat while Mahomes and Reed did all the work.
Yeah, people act like he's back there, you know, like eating chips and hanging out while Andy Reed and Patrick are doing all the work. Like it doesn't work. He's the offensive coordinator. It doesn't work like that. He might not have always called plays. We know Andy Reed's a big benefit, but I do think Bieniemy can bring a lot to this team that has a ton of talent at the skill position spots, especially in the wide receiver room. So I'm excited about it. Number six here. Los Angeles Chargers, Kellen Moore, former Cowboys offensive coordinator. He is now their offensive coordinator. Again, I think this one fits into the net positive for the offense. They needed to change from what Joe Lombardi was doing as the offensive coordinator there. We talked about that a lot on the podcast. I'm just not 100% sure. You know, I'm kind of like 90% confident that Kellen Moore is going to be an upgrade here for this team, but there's still 10% of me that like some of the concepts might still be a little stale. He's a tough guy to figure out, Kellen Moore, but I think net positive for the offense.
Yeah. I was surprised you didn't have him to the upper tier, but I get it. This seems about right. I think it is an upgrade. The one thing they have to do, which is totally obvious, you talked about Jim Bob Cooter kind of turning Matthew Stafford into a check down Charlie. That's what Joe Lombardi was doing last year. Like Justin Herbert has one of the strongest arms we've ever seen. He's got to unleash it. And I get that there were some personnel issues there. They didn't have really a receiver that could stretch a field. So the Chargers got to get on their horse in free agency and figure that thing out and get somebody who could stretch a field. But I just think Kellen Moore is going to be better. I think if nothing else, just the change itself, just shaking things up to say, we know that what we ran on offense last year was not good. Like that doesn't fit what we want to do. Kellen Moore is a smart guy. He's going to understand that and figure out, I need to get more out of Justin Herbert or I'm going to be the next guy gone and they're going to find somebody who can do it. I like this. I like this hire for the Chargers. And I think that their offense looks completely different this season.
Yeah. I go kind of back and forth on whether I should have had more in tier one, but I do think he's a good offense coordinator. I think he's similar to Scott Turner, what I said about with the Washington Commanders, really good play designs. Sometimes the sequencing in games has some questions, but you know, we're going to talk about the Cowboys a little bit later. That maybe there's some push and pull there in terms of the guys that are still in Dallas versus Kellen Moore. We'll see about that. Three other guys I've got in tier two. I'll let you kind of pick whichever ones you think are too high, too low, whatever. I've got seven, Los Angeles Rams. Mike LaFleur is their offensive coordinator. Look, I think obviously it's still going to revolve around Sean McVay. This is definitely a friends and family plan hire, but I do think Mike LaFleur, very similar to what I just talked about those last three guys, good offensive designs. I think he kind of got scapegoated in New York a little bit. And then Kansas City, look, I'm like maybe the last Matt Nagy truther on planet Earth. I don't think he was a good head coach, obviously, with the Bears. But I think, again, well-designed offense, continuity there. I think Nagy's going to be fine for Kansas City. Not a ton to talk about there. I've got Bill O'Brien at number nine, last guy in tier two. We know he's a former Alabama offensive coordinator. The biggest friends and family plan of all time. The Patriots are literally like the friends and family team right now this point. He's the offensive coordinator there. I think it's just a giant upgrade from the Matt Patricia Joe Judge thing, and I think we'll get them at least to like respectable and serious at the NFL level from an offensive perspective.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about the Rams and Chiefs. We all know the head coach kind of runs the show there. But having those guys in those positions, totally fine. I think LaFleur with the Rams helps out McVay. He can get back to that, having a guy like Kevin O'Connell, who he really trusts, to kind of take some of the load off of his plate. I like that hire for the Rams. Obviously, the Chiefs were always going to promote Nagy if Bieniemy left, which he did. Don't have much to say about that. Their offense is going to be the same, I think. I'm really shocked you didn't have the Patriots in that top tier, because if we're just talking upgrade. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Like, we can say whatever we want about Bill O'Brien, but most of his problems were as a general manager. Like, he made so many stupid moves. Like, you trade the world for Laramie Tunsil and you're shocked that he wants a huge contract. Like, okay. Like, you didn't know that you gave away all the leverage. You trade DeAndre Hopkins away for nothing. Like, all these things were just dumb things that he did. Whereas offensive play caller-wise, I think he's fine. And fine for the 2023 Patriots is such an upgrade over the disaster last year when you had receivers running into each other downfield. This is easily to me a tier one hire, not because I love Bill O'Brien, but just the upgrade's massive. The upgrade, just to get an adult in a room who actually knows what he's doing, calling an offense, I think it's huge for Mac Jones. Is your pullback a little bit? You have him 9. Is the pullback a little bit? You just don't like Bill O'Brien as a play caller. You didn't want to put him into top tier because of that. Because to me, if we're just talking upgrades, easily top tier.
Yeah, no, I think if you're saying upgrade in terms of from where they were to where they are now, there's probably not because they had a flipping defensive coordinator called stupid. Offensive plays last year. Is it Matt Patricia like moving on to be the senior assistant for the defensive assistant for the Broncos, something like that, right? I don't know. Who cares? It doesn't really matter. Frank, I should.
that's the correct response.
I don't even know why I asked you. You're like, you know, Midwestern Atlantic Conference basketball matters more than what Matt Patricia's doing this year. Sorry to even ask. But I think Bill O'Brien, I think some of what was so successful about the Houston offenses that he ran was just Deshaun Watson like pulling things out of thin air.
Sure.
I'm not sure how much credit I want to give O'Brien for that. I do think he's a good coach, but do I think he's like I think he's a needle mover. Like, he's not in tier he's not in tier three for me. We're going to get to that in just a second. But is he a big time advantage every single Sunday compared to what they were dealing with last year? Yes. But overall, on his own individual merit, I'm not 100% sure. I also think I also think the Patriots are just tough to read right now, because like, they have Ramondre Stevenson and that's literally it. Like, Tyquan Thornton, it might be their number one receiver right now, with Devontae Parker cap casualty, perhaps. Aguilar's hitting free agency. Kendrick Bourne, I mean, give me a break. Like, Jacoby Myers is hitting free agency. So
they got like a million number three guys. Yeah.
It's just, dude, maybe threes. By the way, talk about friends and family plan. I was thinking the other day, they might be a Brandon Cooks trade spot. They've done it before.
Him. They need it bad.
Somebody they know. Brandon Cooks, a little bit of overlap with Bill O'Brien, and probably didn't end as frosty as the DeAndre Hopkins thing. So there is that. All right. Tier three here. We can go kind of faster these last two tiers here, so I don't keep you from your Mid-Atlantic Western Conference, Northwestern Christian basketball that you got to break down here, Frank. But tier three, this one is not sure it moves the needle for me. Starting with the Dallas Cowboys, and oh boy, Mike McCarthy's going to take over play calling, but Brian Schottenheimer is the offensive coordinator, whatever. Mike McCarthy says, I just want to run the damn ball.
Of course he did, Matt. Of course he did.
Of course. Why? Because Mike knows who's signing the checks, okay? That's a Jerry Jones quote. You know, Kellen Morey said he wants to light up the scoreboard. I want to light up winning championships or whatever he said. So there's that. This is probably the most impactful and biggest one to discuss from this tier. The other three I have here, number 11, I have the Philadelphia Eagles promoting Brian Johnson, probably similar to the, you know, Matt Nagy promotion. But I know Nagy more than I know Brian Johnson, whatever. But I think that'll be fine. Not sure there's a ton to discuss. Tim Kelly, I almost kind of put Tim Kelly in tier two, but he's the former passing game coordinator. He's going to be the offensive coordinator for the Titans. I think that moves them into the future a little bit. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, last one here, Dave Canales, former Seahawks quarterback coach. He's their offensive coordinator now. We definitely can talk about McCarthy if you want to here, Frank, but what stands out from this tier?
Yeah, and I think real quick, I'll run through the other three. I think Eagles, just the continuity there is really, it's good. It's good for Jalen Hurts, good for the offense. They were going to promote Brian Johnson. Our colleague Jory wrote a long story about Brian Johnson and how everybody spoke highly of him. I think that's easy hire, and that's great. Totally fine. Eagles don't think it moves the needle at all because it's just they're the same. They're going to be the same offense. Same with the Titans. I think that was a smart hire. The Bucs, I don't know what to make of Canales. I just don't know. Like, he really didn't want to talk about his scheme. He didn't want to, like, I don't know who he is or what he's going to do. Yeah. Like, he's kind of an unknown. It's not good or bad. It's just I really don't know. Yes, back to the Cowboys. You just hear the name Brian Schottenheimer and you're like, I guess. Yeah. Like, really, that's the hire. Like, there's all these creative offensive minds out there, and Brian Schottenheimer is just, he's just not. Like, he's fine. Like, he's not terrible, I don't think, but he's not really taking this offense into a new generation. Let's put it that way. Neither is Mike McCarthy. So I think that's a little bit of a step down. I do. I think Moore was better for this offense than the McCarthy-Schottenheimer combo. They could still make it work. They're going to run the ball a lot. It probably downgrades Dak to me. It probably downgrades even CeeDee Lamb because they're going to establish the heck out of it, as some of our friends like to talk about. So I don't love this offense as far as like upgrades go. I just don't see this offense being better with that combination.
Exactly. That's why it's like it doesn't move the needle for me because I mean, McCarthy's stuff is so stale. I know that, like, I think there is a temptation with when things were bad with Dallas last year, it was easy, or even the last 2 years, it was easy to be like, well, whatever's bad is definitely McCarthy, and whatever good is Kellen Moore. I'm not 100% sure I buy that, but, and that's kind of why I have a little bit of skepticism about Kellen Moore, but it's just like, what's inspiring about McCarthy taking over play calling duties? Like, do you really want more on Mike McCarthy's plate? Like, this better also come with like a game management specialist, like a Jerry Rosberg type for Nathaniel Hackett last year. Mike already wasn't good in those situations. No, now he's going to have more on his plate. I don't know if I love that. It just feels very like this team more than any of the others is like, tell me who's going to be at the skill position spots. And I'll tell you if I'm excited about this offense or not. Because, like, McCarthy's offenses put a lot on the quarterback and it puts a lot on the receivers. It doesn't do a lot to, like, get guys open, get layups and stuff like that. When they had mega talented players in Green Bay, good offense. When they didn't, not so much. So if they don't get more around CeeDee Lamb, if they don't get a better season out of Michael Gallup, if they're running, like, a random tight end out there like the Dallas Cowboys have always done in the post Jason Witten era. I don't know if it's Zeke and a rookie running back instead of Tony Pollard and a rookie running back. I don't know. Again, a lot of it's going to come down to the skill position group guys to me. Last tier here, Frank, tier four, this one, I'm just unsure how to feel about it. Starting with D'Amico Ryans. I think D'Amico Ryans is a great hire. Yes. But in terms of the offensive coordinator, it's going to be Bobby Slowick, former 49ers passing game coordinator, is the offensive coordinator. Bobby Slowick, like, literally worked at PFF a few years ago. He is also, again, just a guy we don't really know much of. I could easily see Bobby Slowick, you know, being a huge net positive for this Houston offense. But I just, again, I'm unsure how to feel because he's a bit of an unknown. I think the Shanahan scheme could be great here. Number 15 is probably the most interesting here. Nathaniel Hackett. You might have heard of him before. He's the offensive coordinator here for the New York Jets. Okay. That's probably the one we could talk about the most. And then Jonathan Gannon hires Drew Petzing, former Browns quarterback coach, as the offensive coordinator. Again, 14 and 16, just kind of unknown guys that I'm just unsure how they're going to end up being. Hackett's obviously the biggest name of this group, and there's a wide variety of reasons why I think I should feel unsure about that.
Yeah, you think? Let's start with the Texans because we have to assume it's going to be 49ers-ish, right? And sometimes we make a mistake with that. I made a mistake with that Mike McDaniel. One of the reasons I kind of missed out on the Jalen Waddle train, especially, because I just thought they're going to run it a lot because that's what the 49ers do. Well, no, it wasn't really like that. They spread, you know, they took shots down the field. It wasn't a big yards after catch offense like we've seen Kyle Shanahan run. But I'm just going to assume it's probably a lot of fingerprints from the Shanahan scheme. So that means great things for Damian Pierce. Mm-hmm. I mean, that offensive scheme produces running gains year after year after year after year. And I assume that D'Amico, Bobby Slowick, they're going to want a similar type of offense. And so I think that's really, really good for the running game there. And probably a lot of, I mean, especially with, we'll see what, you know, who they end up with at quarterback, but with a rookie, you're probably going to end up with a lot of short throws, all that kind of stuff. So I assume it's going to be kind of a poor man's 49ers offense. And that's good. Look, the Shanahan scheme has done well for decades now. I mean, it's a pretty good thing for them. The Jets, okay, well, where have we heard this before? Team hires Nathaniel Hackett to try to land Aaron Rodgers. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't come, you just have a bad offensive coach that kind of runs you into the ground. If you didn't learn from the Denver Broncos mistake last year, well, I don't know what to tell you. There's only one reason to hire Nathaniel Hackett as your offensive coordinator after what he showed last year at the Denver Broncos, and that's because you think he can help land Aaron Rodgers. And if it does, hey, okay, I get it. Like, I do. Like, you're going from Zach Wilson to Aaron Rodgers? Yeah, that's a pretty big upgrade. If they don't get him, I just wonder why. What are you doing? Like, Hackett's offense was bad last year. It just, I don't know. And if, yeah, it just, I don't like that hire, to be honest with you, unless they get Aaron Rodgers, and then I'll be like, okay, whatever. And then the Cardinals, I have no idea. None. I mean,
no idea.
Petsing came out and basically said, I'm not going to talk to you about my scheme or what it's going to be. So we don't even know. The one thing he did say, he's going to lean on Murray as a runner. Well, yeah, when he's healthy. We don't know when he's going to be healthy. We don't know if he's going to be healthy all year. Like, it's just, it's impossible to know what this offense is going to be because of the Kyler Murray questions and the Hopkins questions. We don't know if he's going to be there. So I have no, like, of all 16 of these teams we talked about, Cardinals are the one where I'm like, just shrug emoji. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to look like because we don't know who their quarterback is. We don't know anything about their offensive coordinator. They have a defensive-minded head coach, so we can't even take a lot of clues from that. I just don't know. So, yeah, I kind of like the Texans hire. I kind of dislike the Jets hire unless they land Aaron Rodgers and have no idea about the Cardinals.
We're pretty much on the same page there. I'm definitely interested to see what Slowick does, you know, and the Shanahan scheme has become so interesting because what the 49ers did a lot of last year, you know, they ran a lot of power. They ran a lot of, you know, just some things you wouldn't necessarily have thought of from those old, like, wide zone, heavy play action, you know, teams. There's still a concentration around the run game, which should be good for Pierce as long as he doesn't become one of these guys that gets, you know, leapfrogged by a draft pick or whatever. But he was so good last year. And they have so many other needs. You'd think they would focus elsewhere. So we're on the same page here. Yeah, man, Hackett, bro. Like, his offenses weren't even good with, like, the Jaguars or the Bills back in the day. Like, what? I mean, I guess they're trying to entice Rodgers, but it's hard to judge Hackett because he was, like you said at the top with the Broncos, he was like, this is all about Russ. Like, it's whatever. My offense is whatever Russ wants it to be. Well, I don't know what to do with that now. And the Jets have so many talented players that I want to be so excited about.
Oh, yeah. Same here. Like, oh, my goodness. Yes. I was in a couple of keeper leagues last year, late in the year when I'm out of it. The trades I was making was take whoever you want. I want Breece Hall for the next few years. Like, I think – between Breece Hall, obviously Garrett Wilson, you've talked about him a ton because he is just a freaking stud right now. I think Elijah Moore can get unlocked again with a decent quarterback. Like, they have so many things to like on that offense, but is it an Aaron Rodgers offense? And I don't even know if Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers anymore. I've kind of gone back and forth with a few of my friends just saying, like, he's good. I'm not saying he's 2015 Peyton Manning or end of the year or end of the line Ben Roethlisberger or anything, but he wasn't the same guy last year. Maybe it was all the environment. I don't know, but he's 39. And there's been only one guy to really play well into his 40s. That ain't going to become the new normal. Tom Brady's a freak. Like, he will be a freak. We're going to look back 20 years from now and say, oh my God, this dude led the NFL in passing yards at age 44. I wonder how close the wall is with Aaron Rodgers. But if you're the Jets, I totally understand. If you're like, hey, if we can land this guy, we don't need him to be the four-time MVP. We just need him to be good because we were absolute bottom of the barrel quarterback. I get it. I get trying to take that swing. But if Aaron does his Aaron thing and he comes out of the darkness and says, I just want to play for the Packers again for the 50th straight year or whatever we're on now, then what do you have? Like, you just have with Derek Carr, with Nathaniel Hackett, do we think that's going to hum? I don't think so. So we just got to see if Rodgers lands there.
Yeah, and I think, but you know, we didn't talk about this in the news section, but I kind of feel like the Packers, he might come out of the darkness and say, I want to still play with the Packers. And they might be like, okay, we're ready for the next chapter.
I think it's time. I think this is a rabbit hole we don't need to go down because we've already talked for an hour, but yeah, I think it's time for the Packers to trade Aaron Rodgers. I really do. I've done a 180 on that since last offseason. It's just kind of like, he's declining. You can still cash in your chips and get a lot back from a desperate team like the Jets. And I'm not the biggest Jordan Love fan in the world, but you got to see. But this is now or never. Now or never. Like, you spend a first-round pick on him. If you just don't want to lose him for nothing, you got to see this year. This is it. Like, you got to see. Yeah. So I think at the time is right for the Packers to trade him. I think the Jets are a perfect landing spot. But we'll see. You know, it just seems like we're being led down this stupid path again with Aaron Rodgers, and probably will be until we're both older than, we've retired, and Aaron Rodgers is still like, I don't know if I'm going to return to the Packers in 2046. Yeah, like, I don't know.
I'm not Brett Favre, but I am basically Brett Favre.
God, if he goes to the Jets, what a full circle of life that is. I know, right?
He'll be with the Vikings in 24. He'll replace Kirk Cousins in 2024, and history will just repeat itself over. That would be pretty hilarious. That would be pretty hilarious. Funny. Like,
yes,
you know, it was a Rex Ryan team that Favre was the quarterback for, right?
Yeah,
when he went to the Jets.
I'm all positive. Am I wrong about that? Like, that. It seems right. It seems like,
whatever. Who cares?
And he was actually pretty good with them until he got hurt late in the year. Like, he dinged his elbow or something like that. But I know this isn't a betting show, but I've only made one Super Bowl future bet. And I wrote about this too. It's on the New York Jets. Because if they get Aaron Rodgers, their odds go from 25-1 to like 10-1. I think they are a Super Bowl contender with Aaron Rodgers. Not even saying Aaron Rodgers is the MVP anymore. I don't think that guy works here no more. But if the Jets can upgrade like that at quarterback with the talent they have on defense, with the skill guys they have on offense that we've just talked about, I think the Jets are a Super Bowl contender right now if they can land Aaron Rodgers somehow.
It was Eric Mangini was the
Jets, of course,
in 2008.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. In between the Sopranos cameos.
And they had Lavernius Coles, Jericho Cotri, Dustin Keller. Talk about a guy who was before his time. Dustin Keller.
Wow, Purdue, Dustin baby. Keller. Yeah, Big Ten.
Dustin Keller would be a stone cold stud if he was
He'd be a middle class tight end you could embrace, right? Like, if Dustin Keller showed up in his prime in 2023, you'd be drafting him in like the eighth round. You'd be happy.
100%. Put him on the Jets right now, man. And with Aaron Rodgers, that would be exciting. He was like a 240-pound tight end drafted in the first round in 2008 or 2007 or whatever. He was just a little bit before his time. Mm-hmm. Thomas Jones ran for 1,300 yards that year. They had a good defense in previous years, I think. Like, they're literally just it's just history repeating itself. It has to happen because it's just like that Jets team had talent on offense, had guys that needed to be unlocked, had a defense that was pretty good, defensive head coach, needed to save his job. It didn't quite work out for the 2008 Jets. Maybe it works out with the current Jets right now that they get a Packers cast off and Frank cashes in his Super Bowl bet. I love it. I mean, nothing more appealing than like, Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, like trying to mow down the AFC with Josh Allen and the Bengals. And that is the unfortunate thing about Rodgers. Like, we need to keep good quarterbacks in the NFC. The NFC can't be losing good quarterbacks. What a strange difference.
Can you imagine Aaron Rodgers in that New York market, especially those Jets fans? It would just be like, Packers fans are intense, but really nice, right? The media market isn't fierce. Like, it's good. It's a lot harder than you think. But the Jets market, the New York market with Aaron Rodgers, there's flat earth conspiracies or whatnot. And
they're just now getting sick of Rodgers. Packers fans and Packers media members, I think, are just now here. I think it would last maybe 10 weeks until they're sick of Rodgers.
Oh, my God. I can't wait. I can't wait.
All right. Well, Frank, appreciate you stopping by. This has been great. We covered a lot of stuff here. What do you got going on right now that people can check out?
Just, getting ready for March Madness, honestly. Like, just a lot of betting content coming up on it. Are you a basketball guy? Yeah. Like, you don't really step, but the NCAA tournament. You got to watch the NCAA tournament, right? March Madness? You're into that.
Listen, you put a beer in my hand and there's sports on TV. I'll watch it. I don't care. Will I get into it? Not really.
But do you do a bracket?
I have occasionally, not often.
Oh my God,
the year Michigan was number two, I called them randomly without knowing anything. I was like, oh, that's the winner. And it didn't. I was so close. I was in college. Like, I was feeling myself so much. I was like, I could probably never do this again. That was like getting close was good enough for me. But I'll do it. Maybe. I don't know.
You should, man. It's fun. It's great. It's Americana. Like, everybody just drops into the tournament on Selection Sunday. Like, people haven't watched a college basketball game all season are telling me, like, oh, here are the teams that are going to, like, be the Cinderellas and win. Like, okay, all right. You hadn't heard of that team before 2 minutes ago. So that's fine.
UNLV or whatever. Yeah, no, I should get into it. Maybe this year, you know what, Frank, you've convinced me. This year I'll get back into it.
Love it.
I'll make a bracket.
I love it. I'll just read my bracket tips and betting advice. That's all you need. That's all you need.
Literally, man. Hey, Frank, that's literally all I'm going to do. That is going to be the prep. Is I'm going to go to Frank Schwab's writer page on Yahoo Sports. I'm going to binge that stuff and then I'm going to make a bracket and, it'll be busted in 2 seconds.
Yeah,
I'll make one change that you told me not to do. And then that's what I'll, but again, put a beer in my hand, put it on the TV. I'm cool. That's all I'm asked for here. All right, Frank. Well, again, appreciate you stopping by. We'll definitely be hitting you up again soon to pull you out of Midwestern Conference, Atlantic Christian Polo or whatever you're betting on these days here in the NFL offseason. But appreciate your time here today. If you don't already, for God's sakes, you're about to be making these brackets yourself. You're about to be putting these bets down. Follow him on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. I'm at @MattHarmon_BYB. While you're there, make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy. Shout out to Lord Podcast. This is his final show with us here as the producer. We're going to be going through some transition there, but John Gennaro was fantastic as our producer here. He's not going anywhere necessarily, leaving to launch a couple of other podcasts in the Yahoo Sports universe. That's great. We wish him the best of luck, although he is bailing on us. That is, he's doing it for the good of the company, Frank. I guess we can appreciate that. But shout out to John Gennaro for doing some great work on this podcast. Mm-hmm. In my first year as the full-time host, I will be back next week with Charles McDonald, who is currently in Indianapolis, just, I'm sure, laser focused on all those press conferences, Frank, and laser focused on all of the scouting combine takes that we need to know. He is undoubtedly going to have some thoughts that we need to hear on the next episode of the show. Until then, we're out.